the meeting of the Complaints Screening Committee to order. Today's date is December the 12th and the time is 8:28. The purpose of this meeting is to approve the September 18th, 2019 regular session and executive session minutes of the Complaints Screening Committee. Ms. Poe, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. Are there any changes, additions, or corrections to the regular session meeting minutes?
No.
Okay, hearing none, is there a motion to approve the September 18th, 2019 regular session minutes?
So moved.
I second. Any objections? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Are there any changes, additions, or corrections to the executive session meeting minutes?
No.
Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the September 18th, 2019 executive session minutes?
So moved.
I second.
Dr. Mohawk.
Any seconds? Any objections? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Do I hear a motion to adjourn the Complaint Screening Committee?
So moved.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. The meeting is adjourned at 8:30 a.m.
Ready, folks? The time is now 8:30 a.m. on December 12th, 2019, and I call this meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Poe, roll call, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Gill? Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Ms. Shreve?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Please note that the time stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to the former agenda item at a later time. Licensees who attend board meetings may receive continuing education credit for their attendance. Credit may be used to fulfill the ethics requirements. For psychologists who wish to receive CE credit for attending the meeting, forms are available at the table at the door or from a board staff member. In order to receive credit, please register on the CE roster, complete the 3-page CE record form, have the first page stamped and initialed by a board staff member, and keep that page for your records. Give the other 2 pages summarizing the board meeting to the board staff. Please remember that you must stay until the end of the morning session or the afternoon session to earn 3 credits. You must stay for the entire morning and afternoon session to receive 6 credits. The board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. Please place completed survey forms in the survey box on the table. I want to recognize all the board members for your hard work over the past month. And in fact, as this is my last meeting as chair over the past year, thank you very much. Folks don't understand that there are months in which we have 5,000 to 10,000 pages to review, read, and consider, in addition to the various committee assignments that each board member commits to. There are times that the work is quite extensive, and I want to thank and appreciate all folks who have served on the board in doing that. We're grateful for the investment of time, effort, and professionalism that you show. I also obviously want to acknowledge board staff. They could not have a board running as smoothly as this one does without all their hard work, organization, and putting together the meetings and various materials that we have. This has been in a particularly challenging year, and transition between executive directors, amongst many issues that the board has dealt with. So thank you very much, board staff, and I want to thank you for your work throughout this year. I especially want to thank Ms. Michelson, who stepped in as our executive director on an interim basis for several months and helped keep us going, and we didn't miss a beat. So thank you very much. That was incredibly appreciative. And part of that was the help in securing a new executive director for the board. So I'd like to introduce Heidi Herberst Partigan. She began her service with this board last month. She previously served for almost 9 years as the executive director of the Arizona Physical Therapy Board. That does not mean I'm getting in shape. I want to be very clear with that. And most recently, she's managed a national continuing education effort on competence, which is a wonderful skill since psychology is just now taking on the competence initiative. And she did that in work with the Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy. She earned her undergraduate and graduate degrees from the University of Wyoming, a cowboy, and is married to her college sweetheart. She has a teenage son, and by way of reassurance, at least to me and others on the board, she loves dogs. So we'll swap pictures at lunchtime. This one's a bit more difficult for me. The board has just learned that Dr. Brundage's service to the public on this board was very recently concluded, and at a future meeting, we're going to recognize her years of dedication and leadership. In the meantime, Dr. Brundage has submitted a letter to us, which I'm going to read into the record. Dear Dr. Bohansky, as of Friday, December 6th, I was notified by the governor's office that I am no longer a member of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners. My position has been replaced by another licensed psychologist, and he will begin his tenure immediately. It has been an honor and a privilege to serve this board and the citizens of Arizona. My service has spanned over 14 years. I've had the opportunity to work with some of the brightest and hardworking psychologists in the state. Our public members have been fantastic. They have proven to be adept in learning the intricacies of the profession and have provided valuable insight from a public perspective. I would be remiss if I were to fail to acknowledge the dedicated, hardworking staff and executive director. We have developed an environment of open discourse that encourages every member to express their opinion. Our primary mission as a licensing board has been to protect the public, and I believe that we have accomplished that goal. I will miss the intellectual challenge of our work and the difficult issues that we grapple with on a regular basis. Lastly, I will miss the friendships that we have been forged over the years based on mutual respect and compassion. Sincerely, Dr. Brundage. We'll put that in. I would add personally that it's been a privilege to work with her over the past 10 years. Her work as chairman of this board, her work on various committees of the board. It's tough to replace her. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for Dr. Brundage, as I believe I speak for the whole board.
So. I agree. I was devastated this morning.
Well, you work on so many tough issues for so long with somebody, and then all of a sudden they're gone. But that those things occur. I'm supposed to recognize Heidi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners hereby expresses its gratitude to Dr. Bob Bohansky for his dedicated and tireless service as board chair for the year 2019. John C. Maxwell, a widely respected leadership thinker and writer, has said a leader is someone who knows the way, goes the way and shows the way. This is a very apt description of Chairman Dr. Bob. Thank you for your service, and please make room on your shelf for this award.
Oh, I thought you had it written in Chinese. All right, enough of that. We have work to do. Agenda item 4, please. Call to the public. Ms. Poe, is there anyone who's requested to speak?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I will move to agenda item number 5, council update. Ms. Galvin, would you please provide an update for the board?
Since your last meeting, there has not been a lot that has changed. The two matters that you have in Superior Court, the Gray matter and the Denbor matters, have been briefed, and we are waiting a date for oral argument. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from board members for council? Hearing none. I'd like to move to agenda item number 6, which is the consent agenda. A member of the board may remove an item from the consent agenda. Are there any requests to remove any items?
No, but I just like to know I was not at the October 4th meeting, so I will not be voting on those minutes.
Thank you. Noted.
Yes.
Dr. Bowers?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to withdraw item G for independent discussion. That's a discussion regarding the request for extension of time to complete the continuing education requirements from Larry A. Morris, PhD.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Dr. Meyer?
I need to recuse myself from E9, Shannon Clark Sinkowitz. I'm a supervisor.
Thank you. Please noted. Was there another?
Dr. Davis Wilson on the phone, I believe, had something, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yes. I was not in attendance at the last committee meeting, so I will be recusing myself from all of the behavior analyst applications. Or abstaining. I don't know which way. I guess it's abstaining.
Thank you very much.
I just wondered, I was there for most of the meeting, but not all of the meeting in October. So is that a problem? Probably the 1:15 executive session.
You did not attend that.
I don't think I did, but I did the 11 o'clock one.
That is correct. Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Just recuse from those minutes. Mm-hmm.
Are there any others? For myself, I will recuse on item I, which is the request to retake the EPPP from Jennifer Nansen, PsyD, as I am her supervisor. And I will also recuse from E3, as I was Dr. Kieran Gilbert's supervisor as well. Do we have all the recuse?
This is Dymar. I will recuse from item 6A.
6A, thank you. Do we have them all down? Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda as amended?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I would prefer someone who's not recused not to make the motion.
I think we're all recused. Who's left?
I think I'm the only one left, so I'll make the motion.
Okay. Great. Is there a second?
Can anybody do that?
Yeah, we'll probably go ahead.
All right.
Second. Okay. I'll second.
And the legal principle of impossibility, those pieces in which we include minutes, which included Dr. Brundage, are hereby entered into the record as accepted. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign.
Aye.
Thank you. The motion carries. We have a timed item for 8:45.
I think we pulled G again.
Oh,
yes.
Let's talk about G then. We got a couple of minutes.
Okay, yeah. I think pretty clear cut. Basically, it does ask for an extension. The thing that I found would be appropriate would be to give a specific time. Basically, he's saying that he would like an extension and he'd like ample, let's see, a reasonable extension of time. I'd feel more comfortable if we gave a specific amount of time. And I think we can do up to 1 year. So I think that would be acceptable, but want to hear from other board members on that.
Discussion?
I'm good here.
We're good? I'm good with it. Do we need that in form of a motion?
Yes, please.
Dr. Flower, if you would, could you put it in motion form?
Yes, I make a motion that the Dr. Morris's request for an extension of time to do the CEUs be approved with an extension of 1 year.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. That brings us to 8:45. We're right on time. We're now going to move ahead into agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, and possible action related to initial case reviews. I want to remind the board members and those present that the purpose of the initial review is for the board to determine whether there may be a violation of rule or statute. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records and or ARS 38431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Individuals wishing to speak must complete a request to speak form, provide it to the board staff. You will be provided an opportunity to address the board. The first complaint we will address under agenda item 7 is complaint number T-2001 pertaining to Dr. Jernigan. Are there any board members who are recusing from this case? Seeing none, we will continue. Ms. Shreve, you're the lead board member for this agenda item. Would you please provide the board with a factual overview of the case?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, the complaint is was by SM, a former acquaintance of Dr. Jernigan's. He alleges that Dr. Jernigan's claimed to be his licensed psychologist during a 2015 interview with law enforcement that was related to a criminal investigation regarding SM. An audio recording of that interview with the law enforcement officer was provided to the board. Dr. Jernigan currently provides counseling services which at a licensed agency with the Arizona Department of Health Services in the staff section of the agency's website, it provided information of what Dr. Jernigan does, which included, hold on a second, all the different types of therapies that she provides. And then it says she brings a strong comprehensive testing component to the agency. Multiple cognitive demands, including memory, language, vision, and spatia functions, executing functionings, as well as providing standardized measures of adapting, functioning, ability, and personality testing. That was on the website when the board staff looked at the website. It was later removed after the complaint. This complaint was reviewed first by the CSC meeting on September 18th. The respondent did provide a response in a timely manner through her attorney. Dr. Jernigan provides that she has a master's degree in clinical psychology. She also obtained her PhD in clinical psychology. She's currently certified as a sex offender treatment provider through the International Trauma Training Institute. Dr. Jernigan states that she believes that what she said was something to the extent of in the interview, in psychology you deal with patients. She says she does not identify herself as a psychologist and that there's nothing online or on her business cards anywhere that states she is a psychologist. And as a note, she is not licensed through the board, so she is not a licensed psychologist. This also came back to the CSC meeting in September 18, 2019. Let me go back. At the first CSC meeting, they asked for additional information. The respondent through their attorney basically said that we've given you the information that we need to provide you and did not provide additional information. We then subpoenaed her employer for additional information, which we received. At the November 20th CSC meeting, it was the respondent did not, Dr. Jernigan did not attend the meeting, neither did her attorney. The committee felt that there was a possible violation and forwarded it to this board. The violations that were expressed that were possibly violated was ARS 32-2084A, possibly engaging in practice of psychology, ARS 32-2084C1, for possibly the use of designation of psychology, psychological, or psychologist by a person not licensed, and also possibly ARS 32-2084C2 for possible use or a combination of words, initials, or symbols that lead to the public to believe the person is a licensed practice is licensed to practice psychology in the state. And that concludes my summary.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I do have an update for the board members. Late yesterday afternoon, I did receive an email from Dr. Jernigan's attorney, Mr. Chalet. He did submit a short two-page letter, which is included in the board's folder today. Dr. Jernigan's attorney did indicate that they would not be present at today's meeting, so the members may want to review the letter first before proceeding.
Thank you for your summary, Ms. Shreve. If you could, please. There is a... this is the one on legal, typed up on legal stationery.
Correct.
If we could review that for a moment so we can dispose of this matter. Finish a paragraph or two. Ms. Poe, is there anyone who has requested to speak?
I believe that the complainant, SM, is on the phone. SM, are you there?
Yes, I am.
SM, would you like to address the board?
Well, if I could, please. Just to reiterate what I have said before, there has been the question that she's actually saying psychology, whereas if you listen to the whole, what she's saying, it's just like he says he's a psychologist. When you put everything together, the whole sentence that she's explaining to the policeman what the relationship is and the dynamic is that she's the psychologist and then I'm like the patient. So there's no question as to what she's, well, in my mind, as to what she's saying. I mean, as I said at a previous one of these meetings is that I took the recording to a medical transcriptionist who has over 30 years experience listening to recordings with medical terminology, and the transcriptionist hears psychology. So, I mean, just this, the context in which she uses it verifies what she is actually saying. So I guess that's all I have to say on.
Thank you very much. Board members have any questions for the complainant? Hearing none, I would move on. We'll now begin discussion deliberation on this case. As I indicated earlier, focus of the initial case review is to determine whether there may be a violation of statute or rule. Ms. Shreve, would you like to begin the deliberation on this case?
Yes. I listened to the tape several times, and it appears, from my opinion, that it sounded like she said she was a psychologist. But that's
That's just one of the minor issues. I think what more concerning is the website does talk about, you know, the testing, the things that she does. She's not here for us to ask any questions, you know, to address the issue, which is concerning. I mean, I think it could be in some ways cleared up if we could just have some concerns. And yet what the position of their position is, we basically don't have, if I'm reading this right, authority to ask those. And the only legal authority this board has regarding is to take her to court. It's concerning. There's enough like little red flags to say, hey, we got an issue here, but yet we're not willing to address it.
Dr. Milan?
I was looking at the web pages, and they have made a significant change to the new one, and they removed all testing references. However, like Ms. Shreem, I'm concerned that she was doing testing and also not under the supervision of a licensed practitioner who's eligible to do testing and all of that. So there's no information on, you know, who was her supervisor, who was author, you know, and there's nothing in the records. Obviously, she probably received training because she went through the RBC program and then never got licensed. But, regardless of whether you're, and she's not even an LAC, I didn't see any LPC license that accompanied our school psychology, you know, some of the specific programs that do different levels of testing. So that is a concern. And like Ms. Shree, if she was here, we could ask her who supervised, was she writing reports, who signed up on the reports, you know.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, I share similar concerns. When I saw that the information on the website was changed, I was happy to see that. But it also did not indicate whether or not she was still doing the testing. So it might be, well, we'll just not put it there, we'll just do it. And then even if she quit doing it, if she was doing it under supervision, that's a problem. Without supervision, appropriate supervision, that's a problem. Within the paperwork, I did say that she did have or does have a supervisor, but not a psychologist. So as far as some of the clinical work she's doing, that could be argued. But if she is indeed doing the testing, that should only be done by a licensed psychologist or someone under appropriate supervision. If she's done that there she should not have done it. And if she continues to do it, that's a continuing violation. But we don't know because we can't directly ask those questions.
Thank you, Dr. Flower. Is there any other comment? Dr. Malott?
This is really a question for Ms. Galvin. Could we subpoena her to come to our meeting?
You could issue that subpoena because she's not a licensee and we're not a court of law. She would not be obligated to comply.
Dr. Meyer.
The only other aspect is in the updated material we received from her agency, it said she's practicing as a behavioral health technician. That was added to the website when they removed the testing, but the descriptions she's still providing of services that she provides would be beyond those of a behavioral health technician. So I think there's ongoing issues that have not been fully resolved.
I agree, and as Dr. Flower notes, they have publicized that she does personality and cognitive testing and an array of services that I think fall under the scope of practicing psychology without a license. They have taken down the ad or reference on the webpage. That doesn't mean she hasn't been. That doesn't mean she's not continuing to. And I'm concerned that because someone obtains a PsyD yet does not obtain licensure, goes out and convinces an agency that they're capable of expanding their scope of services by providing X, Y, and Z, it's not done under supervision. And this could be, this matter could be disposed of if you would come in front of us and say, yes, I have a supervisor, this is who it is, and I function as a psychometrist, and they're signed off by so-and-so who supervises me. That makes a hell of a lot more sense to me than having an attorney try to tell me what powers this board has or does not have. So I find it a bit frustrating that this could be disposed of and should be disposed of by following standards of our rules and the ethics in psychology. And I see no attempt on their part to do that, and I remain frustrated with it. Any further discussion? Is there a motion in this case?
I'll make a motion that I motion that we forward this to a, what it would be, at an administrative hearing? Is that correct terminology?
No, your option would be to forward it to the Attorney General's office, the Consumer Protection Division, or alternatively direct me to file a case in Superior Court seeking an injunction.
So the first one was to go to attorneys, like a complaint.
Correct.
And they would do the scope of whatever.
They would review it and determine whether they would pursue an action.
Or we can move forward and ask for an injunction. At that point, she'd have to address that.
Yes.
I would prefer, I would prefer that. I think it, I mean, as a, I represent the general public. I'm not a psychologist. You know, it just is concerning to me that we have, you know, we're not sure what she's doing. There's enough red flags that she might have gone out of her scope providing services she's not licensed for. The general public doesn't really understand what you're licensed for or not. I would just like to know for sure that what she's doing and that, and like I'm like with you, Dr. Blahansky, if she'd just be here and explain it, we would know what, you know, what the situation was. So my preference would be to maybe file an injunction. Maybe?
I'm not in favor of that because missing Mike may be using all those. I mean, if she was out there, I mean, we're not sure. So I would prefer the administrator, but that's my preference.
I have a legal question.
Yes.
Counsel, do we have the ability to obtain from this agency any records to see if there's a report, psychological evaluation report, or several that she's prepared?
Would the board care to receive legal advice in executive session?
Yeah, I'm going to move to get legal advice in executive session.
Seconded.
All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. If those in the audience would stay where they are. The board has an executive session room, and we're going to adjourn to that for a few minutes to get confidential legal advice, and we'll be right back with you. All right, we're back in regular session. I'd like to continue the discussion on trying to resolve the matter of Dr. Kaufman. Does anyone have a motion?
Not Kaufman.
Jernigan. Not Kaufman.
I'm sorry. Jernigan.
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion. I want a motion that we subpoena the agency to get copies of any, you know, basically notes, reports, exactly in her case files related to evaluating and doing assessments of clients
3 years.
So for the last 3 years, so going back to 2017, so January 2017 to the current date.
Okay. Dr. Flower?
Can we also specify assessments would include any testing?
Yeah, it was any testing and assessments and evaluations that are psychological, we make the determination what psychological.
Yeah. Is there a second?
I second.
Do we need a roll call vote on a subpoena?
You do not.
All in favor?
This is Dinar. I wanted to make an observation regarding this motion. I think we will have the authority to issue subpoenas only if there is a pending investigation. So the way I see this agenda item listed before is to decide whether to continue the discussion or continue the investigation before we can make the motion for subpoenaing documents. Specifically, I'm looking at statute 2091.10. It says in connection with an investigation. So I believe we need to first decide if there is going to be an investigation before we decide whether to authorize staff to issue a subpoena.
Counsel.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dinar, the matter has a complaint. It has been opened. A number has been assigned, and the board is conducting an investigation. So I'm comfortable that a subpoena issued in this matter is appropriate.
All right, because we're not closing this. Mm-hmm. We're still.
It's a continuation,
of the complaint. So we're still in the investigating.
Is there further discussion? Do we have a, we had a motion and a second?
You do.
Hearing no further discussion, all in favor, aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye. Dinar opposes.
Did you vote no?
Yes, you said he opposed. Dinar.
That's correct, I oppose.
Thank you. Please note, one no. Motion carries. And council will proceed.
Yes.
Okay. That that concludes Dr. Jernigan's complaint for today. Second complaint we'll address under agenda item number 7 is complaint number 1910 pertaining to Dr. Kaufman. Are there any board members who need to recuse on this? Hearing none. Dr. Meyer, you're the lead board member on this agenda item. Would you please provide the board with a factual overview of the case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is initial review of complaint number 1910 involving licensee Dr. Shelley Kaufman and complainant EL. I'm the lead board member in the case and will provide a brief factual overview. Also plan to just give a very brief summary as there's an additional motion relating to this case. Dr. Kaufman is a licensed psychologist as well as a licensed professional counselor with the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. She's maintained this license since 2004 with no prior discipline. From 2017 to 2018, complainant EL participated in 14 therapy sessions with Dr. Kaufman. EL submitted a complaint alleging multiple issues that occurred while in session. From the complaint screening, this was continued, but then was reviewed. EL felt that therapy sessions were not focused on her presenting problem, that a number of unrelated topics were often discussed, and that this was very stressful to EL. She also alleged that Dr. Kaufman engaged in EMDR, which was not appropriate for her. And most concerning was that when EL reported suicidal thoughts, she felt that Dr. Kaufman abandoned her. Dr. Kaufman responded that these allegations were not accurate, that she did have a treatment plan and that EMDR was appropriate, and that treatment she has certification for, and that she followed appropriate steps for dealing with the referral for psychiatric hospitalization. Subsequently, and can I merge, talk about the additional information coming in?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, too many tabs. Subsequently, on December 10th, we received a report from Dr. Kaufman's attorney that Dr. Kaufman wished to surrender her license. A consent agreement for voluntary surrender was sent to Mr. Struble and Dr. Kaufman, and Dr. Kaufman has signed the consent agreement and submitted for the board to discuss. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you.
And to add, Dr. Kaufman's attorney, Mr. Struble, is here today if the members have any questions, and I believe the complainant, EL, is on the phone as well.
Okay, I'll start with the complainant. EL, is there anything that you would like to have the board hear or consider in this matter?
I believe at this point that... Sorry, I have a problem with mute. No, I think at this point my letters speak for themselves, and I appreciate the board taking the time to listen to my concerns, and the whole goal was to hope that no one gets harmed in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attendance. Council, could you please introduce yourself to the board, and if you have a statement.
Thank you. My name is Charles Struble. I do represent Dr. Kaufman in this matter. You may know from the prior review that Dr. Kaufman has not been practicing because of a medical issue that she has. In fact, when you call her number, she says that she's been on a six-month sabbatical. Assuming the board agrees to the consent to surrender her license, we'll have her change that to simply say she's not practicing at all.
Okay. Are there any questions for counsel? Hearing none. Thank you, counsel, for your appearance today. Board will now go into deliberation. Dr. Meyer, will you start the process for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I feel that the Dr. Kaufman's surrender of her license resolves the issues that are before us.
So should we jump to the item regarding her license?
We've kind of merged them already.
Okay. And she has a pending renewal application, yeah. So we'd have to, would that have to be denied? Or
if
that...
you accept the proposed consent agreement, then you would just deem her application for renewal as withdrawn.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, is there any discussion then? You've had a chance to review the consent agreement?
Mm-hmm. I think it's reasonable.
Yes. Okay.
It would be reported as discipline.
That's understood.
It would be?
Okay. Oh, because the consent agreement.
Yeah.
Yes. Mr. Chairman? Just to comment, we don't know what would be the disposition if she were to try to meet with the board and talk about rehab and this and that and the other. Apparently, she does not want to pursue any of those.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. Dr. Kaufman is retiring. She's been in practice for many years now, and she's reached this point in her life where she wants to retire regardless of this board.
Okay, so she's like, why go through it?
Exactly.
Because, you know, she apparently had many really valuable years of service. And it's unfortunate that it would end this way. But thank
well
you.
Said. Thank you.
Dr. Bohansky, is there, I mean, I would be okay with her just submitting whatever, you know, not renewing her license. So then it just, I don't know what you do to retire a license. Because we haven't really reviewed and determined that she's, you know, she has violated anything. This is just an initial review. But if she were to retire her license, then it wouldn't be a reportable discipline. And I don't know if that's an option.
Counsel.
Again, would you care to receive legal advice in executive session?
Sure. I make a motion that be.
I second the motion.
We have a motion and a second.
Go ahead and vote, but you may want to look at paragraph 11 of the proposed consent agreement under the recitals.
11, what page?
It's page 2 of the consent agreement. Under the recitals, it's paragraph 11.
Okay.
So she's made an acknowledgement that she's entering this consent agreement to avoid the expense, uncertainty, and prolonged time involved in further administrative proceedings. The issues contained herein are resolved by settlement and not actually litigated. So she's making that acknowledgement.
So if she were to come back, say 10 years from now, and wants to reinstate her license, would this be?
There's nothing that would prohibit her from doing that. The board could take this into account, but she would not be barred from making the application. Yes, that's correct.
And she signed this.
She did, and she's represented by legal counsel.
Right.
And
you're saying she's okay with this?
Yes. Thank you.
Withdraw the motion.
I didn't make a motion.
Yeah,
I just.
Session.
Oh, for executive session. Okay, I withdraw that motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agreement.
We have a motion to accept the consent agreement. Is there a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
You will need a roll call.
Is there further discussion?
No.
Is there further discussion? Hearing none. Could I have a roll call vote, Ms. Pohl, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
No.
Dr. Gill?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve? We have a motion, 8 yeses, 1 no. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Motion carries. And thank you, counsel, for appearing.
I do have one question that only relates to the renewal application, which is she sent a check for $500 to get that done. Could that be refunded? I have no idea.
I think the executive director can take care of that.
If we could have discussion after with the executive director, that'll be resolved for you.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
And you want to vacate then the initial review of this case?
I believe that the motion passing by that did that. Am I correct?
You don't need to take a vote.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. That concludes that agenda item. Agenda item 10 is actually a timed item for 10 o'clock.
We have 30 minutes.
So we have 30 minutes. So we're going to run through a bunch of these other items if we could.
Dr. Bohansky, if we could go to agenda item number 22 for Dr. Aiken's renewal application. Dr. Aikens is present here today with his attorney.
Yes. In fact, that was the little sticky note I had sitting on my screen that's where we were going to move. So agenda item number 22, Ms. Poe. Could you please provide the board with an update on this item?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. On November 15th, 2019, the board office received Dr. Aiken's 2019 psychologist application for license renewal. Board staff noted that Dr. Aiken's answered yes to question number 9, which asks, since the last license period, have you been or are you currently the subject of an investigation by a regulatory agency? Licensing board involving allegations of unprofessional conduct, including ethical violations, the provision of psychological services, or financial improprieties. Dr. Aikens also answered yes to question number 10, which asks, since the last license period, have you been or are you currently the subject of an investigation by a professional organization, healthcare institution, provider panel, or any private military or government organization involving allegations of unprofessional conduct, including ethical violations and provision of psychological services or financial improprieties?
Dr. Akins provided a detailed response, including supporting documentation. All documentation has been included for your review. Dr. Akins' renewal application has not been processed. Board staff is requesting direction from the board, and Dr. Akins and I believe his attorney, or just Dr. Akins, are present today.
Thank you very much. Board's members, do you have any questions for Ms. Poe? Very good. We have Dr. Akins here. Would you like to make a statement, sir?
I appreciate that all of you have read the response that I provided. I hope that it clarifies this unfortunate situation. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. The issue has long since been resolved, completely dismissed. But if any of you do have questions, of course, I'm happy to address those for you.
Board members, do you have any questions of Dr. Akins?
I think the letter clarified any questions we may have, and I'm ready to make a motion to accept the renewal.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. We'll now pause as their discussion.
I'm sorry, can you please repeat the motion? It was hard to hear.
The motion was to approve the renewal application.
Okay, thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Council, do we need a roll call on that?
You do not.
All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no. Hearing none, the motion carries. Dr. Akins, thank you so much for appearing.
My pleasure.
Thank
you. I'd like to just keep continue down then on item number 23, Dr. Malott. This is a discussion consideration possible action regarding the application for temporary license and the sit for the EPPP from Dr. Katz.
Okay. Let me open it up. So Dr. Katz is one of the is part of the discussion that we had a couple of meetings ago regarding the term of residency. She completed most of her coursework from Argosy in the Chicago's from Argosy, and then she transferred to the Chicago School of Professional Psychology and earned her degree from there. As a result of transferring all her coursework, she does not meet the residency requirement, which is one of the many requirements to obtain her license. She has all the coursework. Her program is APA approved. She's done a appropriate supervised professional experience for her internship. And so we thought we would bring it to the full board. I do not recall whether we had a resolution regarding that issue. So I'm hoping that maybe I could be updated. Somehow in my mind, I thought we did, but I was informed that we did not. So that's basically the question that is left outstanding.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. I will speak to it unless there are others that have issues. This is an ongoing concern for us since the unforeseen closure of Argosy University left at least two cohorts in the wind, meaning they had completed, under an APA-approved program, completed their coursework. Most were in internships or about to start internships. Our rules say they have to do their last 18 hours from the degree-granting institution. These students transferred to another APA-approved program to complete the degree, which meant complete the internship and have that signed off, and that would complete their degree. But in the process of doing that, they didn't pick up 18 credits. And that creates a conundrum. The fix for it is in the works, in that we have discussed with Committee of Reference a session law addition that would go through this term, as majority of these folks will be coming up after this new year. Apparently, we have another one who's finished a bit early, who's on it. So we're in the process of completing session law change. Where I personally stand on this is I know, and I think every member of this board knows, that through no fault of their own, they didn't receive their 18 credits from the school issuing their diploma. The school issuing their diploma is APA approved. The school where they took their residency here in Phoenix was APA approved. They met all of the requirements that are within our educational standards in the law, except for the last degree granting institution wasn't the one where they received their degree. Well, the one where they did their work closed through no fault of their own. They didn't transfer voluntarily to get around something. They transferred under an agreement reached with the University of Chicago. I was involved in the discussions on that with their provost, with their dean, and with their attorneys to try to get the transcript to say they recognized the residency. They felt that would be dishonest if they put that on it, but they also recognized they'd completed the residency. So that falls us back to having to change the state law to cover these folks, or, and I've checked with multiple other jurisdictions, meaning other states, they had clauses which allowed appeals of qualification. We don't have one of those in our law. So I see it, and I will ask counsel if I'm seeing it correctly. We either ask a licensee to wait until the session law goes through. I don't think that's a fair thing to do, but it's a legal option. Or we take the unprecedented move of approving an application outside of our requirements because we know the candidate is qualified and what the situation was. The concern there, I'm sure counsel will yell at me and say you're setting a precedent and that this board doesn't want to set a precedent to go outside the law. Yet if we don't, we delay a qualified candidate's application. And I think that this board does not want to delay people who want to go to work as psychologists over some type of technicality that is not of our making or the candidate's making. So Dr. Malott has presented a hot issue. And I will now open it for discussion. Yeah, that's what I thought. Dr. Meyer.
Ms. Galvin, is there any way to make a exception in this case legally?
I believe that Dr. Bohansky has summarized the board's dilemma very accurately.
So my question is, since we are entering into a legislative session, if we were to put something forward and it was taken up by the respective legislative bodies and it got voted, then we are talking about a 2 or 3 month delay, or does it go into effect like July 1?
And this is exactly what the governor wanted not to happen when he said people moving to this state who come here, they have to wait 3 and 4 months to get to work, and we don't want that to happen. We want this state to be
follow the law.
We know that, but we also have to follow the law. Now, in this case, this is an Arizona case. This is not anyone moving here. This is not a questionable school. This is not a questionable education or background. This is not a questionable internship. These are not questionable students. These are folks that have been involved and working toward this application process in good faith for some period of time, most of them 5 years plus. And they're now here at that point. And because a school closed,
And a good number of people went the extra mile to get them in, admitted to a graduate, an approved graduate school in which they didn't have to take any classes, just so they could receive a degree for the work that they'd put in. Those negotiations occurred, that happened, and now the students are stuck holding this bag. I tried to very nicely summarize and say, there's no legal way for us to do it under Arizona law because we've been talking for some time.
Yeah.
As chairman this year, I have been meeting with the committees of reference in the House and Senate to discuss possible language changes in session law that we could do to assist these students in some non-controversial way so that we could be, and for the bulk of them, if we get the session law through, which I think we will, because we have behavior analyst rules that have to change. We have the sunset legislative piece that we're up for review, so that has to go through. We have the report that says we have to have fingerprinting. We have to open the law and make some changes. So that's going through and in the process. I think the representatives have been very accepting of what this problem is and know it, and it's going to go through. The question is, in hope and anticipation of that happening, can we make the unprecedented move of approving someone?
This is Dr. Gill. There is no precedent for this?
Nope.
No. Not in Arizona, sir.
No. And I feel
okay.
As a person from a regulatory background, I feel uncomfortable going against the law, especially in a broad sense, in that once you make this decision, I mean, we're doing it because we know Argosy closed. This is a specific to Argosy situation.
Yes.
That's so, and I don't know how to motion it or how to make it so, hey, it would only be for Argosy students that closed that move, because that's a whole different, you know, seems like a special circumstance. But again, it doesn't fall within the law. So the minute you start stepping outside the law without some kind of parameter of why we did it strictly, really clearly, I think we open ourselves up to issues, you know, down the road. This is a hard one. I don't know.
Dr. Milan.
I think we need to pursue the session law change. I mean, I'm really open to having the appeal built in. So then we can address specific circumstances. And so like other jurisdictions that have that, maybe that's the language we should go towards. And then once we have that, then we are able to renew specific cases. The other thing that we have going for us, and I've seen it happen before, we can insert a statement that is temporary and it expires, say, in 3 years. I mean, it does give other people the opportunity, but that's the way it goes.
Well, that's what session law does.
Yeah, okay.
It puts a very time limit in.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
And then poof, it disappears.
Yeah. So that's my recommendation, that okay. We continue to pursue session law. I know there's a delay, but it's unfortunate. There's a delay for many of the students who are in that situation, and we are all working around it.
As I reviewed with our representatives, we had an Argosy program here in Phoenix, but there are 9 Argosy programs across the country with literally 1,000 students affected by this.
In psychology, 160,000 nationwide.
Nationwide.
160,000. I mean, different programs.
Different. Well, the psychology, we have 1,000. Mm-hmm. Now, some of those people could be coming to Arizona. So anything we do can't just be for the Phoenix school. It has to be for the University Argosy and has to cover those students. Now, the ones in the years behind that, fortunately, have a new PsyD program that's starting in January here in Phoenix, and they can move their credits into that program and move forward, and it won't be a problem. It's those who are in internship this year and were internship last year. That's the bubble group right there.
I think we go forward with the session law. I would have a hard time going against not following the statute.
Then what do we do with the good Dr. Katz?
I think, she has 180 days, 2 years. What is the time limit?
She has 240 days for substantive review. The other thought I had was perhaps she could have her application administratively closed and then reopened once the legislation went through. I don't know if that's an option.
Did Dr. Katz have a temporary license?
No, she cannot.
This is what she's applying for.
The application is for the temporary license.
You have to meet all requirements even for the temporary, except for the supervised professional experience.
Yeah.
Exam.
Did we actually put that in the temporary license law?
I am almost any kind of license that we issue, they have to meet the requirements, and then basically they have the option of doing the exam, doing the postdoc, and we can look at it. But
yeah, it says temporary licensure who is working under supervision for postdoctoral experience and who meets the requirements of Section 322171.
Why was that dumb? Temporary license are people working under supervision, and I wish that license was more flexible. I'm just looking for a way to help these students. I'm sorry.
Think we all feel, I feel terrible for it. It's a bad situation. It's just your heart goes out to all those students. I'm just not sure how to get around, it is, unfortunately, is what it is. That's the sad part.
Doctor?
Yes, indeed. I think the students are victims, but making, violating statute by ignoring them, that would be precarious. And I agree with Dr. Milan and other board members that hopefully something can be expedited through the legislative process so these people can be appropriately licensed when eligible.
I don't have enough experience, Dr. Bohansky. Obviously, is there any way, do we have to wait? If the legislature passes it, I don't know how that timing works. Is there any way, it could be done as soon as March or February?
It effective immediately under certain provisions, but I don't know if that's possible.
The wizards of the legislative process would have to answer that for us.
Okay. And I had a question for Ms. Folks. If the application is administratively closed and then it's reopened, do they have to pay the fee again?
We were just discussing that quietly, that we would probably refund her money if she withdraws.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If it's administratively closed, she would not lose the money.
Okay.
It would stay within the board. It wouldn't be refunded, but
it can be.
I think your executive director might have the ability to refund in this unique circumstance if she withdraws.
Could we just put this on hold?
We run into the 240 days. That's what I'm afraid of.
Okay. Yeah, it may not get an effective date within 240 days. We want it to have an effective date as soon as possible, but
yeah, and so then it expires.
Yeah. So is there any action that we need to take as a board if that's our
move to allow her to withdraw her application, give the executive director the authority to refund her application fee if requested, but not deny her application given the unique circumstances?
I so move, exactly as Ms. Galvin stated.
I'll second it. Any discussion? Any discussion? And discussion. Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Was there a second?
Yeah, Dr. Bohansky seconded.
Okay.
Motion carries. Dr. Milad, as long as we're with you and we still have 10 minutes, is Jennifer Flower?
Yeah, Jennifer Flower.
Is that quick?
I think she changed her application status from there was some question on some of the information, and it's come to the full board rather than the
you know, under the consent item because it happened between the time we met and today. So she changed her application to, let me open it up. I forget now, as quickly as I saw. She changed her application status to licensure, and Ms. Folks, could you help me? I'm trying to find the right page.
She had initially applied for ECCC and
approval of the postdoc. Her postdoc had deficiencies, and but she is allowed to, you know, complete those deficiencies while she sits for the exam. So we're just changing her category to.
If I could, I apologize. The board actually has approved her postdoc on November 1st, 2019.
Okay.
And so she is, she was approved for ECCC and licensure, and then she took the exam. She did not pass. She sent in a reapplication, but then she had an, a potential employer who asked her to apply instead for the temporary.
Oh, okay. And that's
then,
what it was.
And then she found out that, and then they came back to her and said, no, that's not what you need. You need the ECCC and licensure. So she asked us to go back to the reapplication that she had submitted.
Very confusing.
So the committee has already approved the temporary license, but I took it off the consent agenda and brought this to the board because there's a time frame for her, and, and it was not really on her that caused it.
So okay.
She's taken it twice, right?
She doesn't need to submit a study plan. That's after the third time.
Oh, okay. That was my question. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, we reviewed the application and approved it, Dr. Flowers and I. And
okay. So
there's no problem. It's just changing the status.
Do we need a motion to change your status?
We just need a motion to approve her new application. This new status wasn't, this was after the fact, correct?
Our,
that's the reason.
Our application committee has reviewed it and is comfortable with it.
Yeah. So all just approve her application for licensure and exam.
I move we approve her application for licensure and exam.
Second.
Any discussion? Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to call a brief comfort break before we get into our 10 o'clock item, which is going to happen very close to 10 o'clock. So if we could please have a comfort break. So we're going to come back to order, please. I am going to apologize. There are a couple things that I forgot to do in my introduction, and I'm going to take all the responsibility, even though they prepare a script for me, and I pretty much try to keep to the script so that we keep moving it on time. But I neglected to formally welcome and introduce, although we'll do that at the January in-person meeting, the two new appointees the governor has provided to the board. We've been looking for appointees, and those are Mr. Dinar, who is representing the public. And we still have another opening for a public representative, which we are desperately seeking because they contribute so much to our discussions. So welcome, Mr. Dinar. And also Dr. Gill has been appointed as a practicing psychologist. And we're looking forward to meeting both of you at the January meeting, and I know your appointments were very close to this meeting, and being able to prepare for one of these sometimes takes us a little while, so thank you for participating and spending late night hours catching up with our agenda item. And the last introduction, which I neglected to make, was we have in the audience today a professional issues and ethics class from Midwestern University's College of Health Sciences, and they're all taking notes on what you each and every one of you does, and as it's my class, I'm going to be expecting critiques of all of you, and that'll be
including your professor. It's fine. You have our permission.
and that'll be the basis of your grade, so now you know how to write that one. Okay. So again, welcome to our two new distinguished board members. The students and members of the audience know, once the governor's office vets someone and approves them, they then go through a legislative process, confirmation hearing, followed by a confirmation hearing in the full Senate. And over the next several months, as the session comes in, our two new members will go through that process and join our board for a term of at least 5 years. So welcome to them. Good luck in your confirmations. And we look forward to meeting you in person in January. I've caught up with what I should have said. Now, moving along, we have agenda item number 10, which again is consideration and possible action relating to initial case review. Agenda item 10 is based upon a complaint number 2003 pertaining to Dr. Neil Olshan. Are there any board members who need to recuse knowing Dr. Olshan? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Dr. Meyer, you're the lead board member for this agenda item. Would you please provide the board with a factual overview of this case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Initial review of complaint number 20-03 involving Dr. Neil Olshan and complainant SL. On July 15th, 2019, the board received a complaint from SL, which indicated the following, that he had moved to that he lives in Minnesota but spends winters in Sun City. He saw Dr. Olshan for anxiety and depression issues in for four sessions beginning in January of 2019 through May of 2019. He represents that Dr. Olshan told him that his treatment would be accomplished by providing him with dynamic autogenic audio tapes. SL alleges that Dr. Olshan never provided him with psychotherapy and that the entire treatment consisted of the tapes. Following the February session, Dr. Olshan emailed SL a sample tape. Following the May session, Dr. Olshan assured SL that he would make a full tape for SL and would email it to him, but that was never received by SL. He states that he sent multiple emails to Dr. Olshan, and that the tape would be sent within a matter of days, but still never received it. SL also alleges that he arrived for two additional sessions, but that Dr. Olshan was not there and did not cancel it ahead of time. SL believes that Dr. Olshan is guilty of unprofessional conduct for the following reasons. He never provided psychotherapy, which was what was paid for. He failed to provide the audio tapes despite promising them on several occasions, and that he refused to respond to SL's multiple emails. Dr. Olshan, in addition, the board received the emails from Dr. Olshan that also indicated that SL alleged that Dr. Olshan had asked SL to drop the complaint, and that he continued to say that the tapes were being sent to him. SL was not able to attend the CSC meeting, and alleged that his only concern was that he had not received the tapes, and that if he received those, he was no longer concerned about the complaint. The board requested material from Dr. Olshan, to determine the status. Records were not provided in a timely manner. Dr. Olshan responded that he forgot about the deadline, that there were issues with him receiving mail as well as sending mail, and was unable to attend the CSC meeting. We requested that records be sent. Dr. Olshan sent a letter outlining several sessions, but no actual treatment records were received. Dr. Olshan stated that he felt SL has anger management issues and is looking for a target, which appears to be Dr. Olshan. He said that he emailed the audio files and that for some reason the hard copies were not sent. Dr. Olshan stated that he's been in practice for 44 years and has only had one other complaint, which was dismissed 25 years ago. Because he did not supply material at the September 18th, 2019 CSC disposition, he did not attend and we were unable to follow up on investigating the allegations. And again, because information was not furnished in a timely manner, it was forwarded to the board. Subsequently, Dr. Olshan again said he would send material but did not. And then I believe that he requested for a continuance for today's meeting. And that is also to be decided upon, but we still have not received the records requested. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you very much, Dr. Meyer. Is Ms. Poe, is there anyone to speak on this issue?
No, neither the complainant or licensee are participating today.
All right, very well. Then we'll go back to Dr. Meyer to open discussion on this case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As was the case for the CSC committee.
Should you first address the motion 11. To continue, please?
Yeah.
Before you get into discussion on the merits of the case, the motion for continue.
There's an item number 11.
Okay. Then we have a request by, I'm going to phrase this a little differently. Paired with this complaint is a request for a continuance that we not deal with this right now. So I'd like to summarize that and have discussion on continuance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as this now seems to be a pattern of not responding with records and not showing up for meetings, I feel that a continuance would not be appropriate.
As I reviewed it, he's essentially, in the initial complaint, it says he doesn't show up for patients, he doesn't follow through with what he has promised patients, and when patients complain, he contacts them then to try to get them to withdraw their complaint. When the board wants to talk with him about it, he doesn't show up to talk to the board, he doesn't provide the records of the treatment that he provided. And when we say we want to sit down and talk to you because you aren't doing that, he asked for a continuance. That's my understanding of this?
Correct.
Our other board members have thoughts about this.
I agree with what you're saying.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, I'm kind of astounded with what he does and does not do. I would think that if the board would ask me for information, I would make it an incredibly high priority, especially if there's a complaint. That's a scary thing for any psychologist. But he did a really minimal response to us for the case review committee. I mean, the day that we were meeting, like 45 minutes before the meeting, he sends an email, doesn't give the records, gives a summary of what he said, because he said, you probably can't read my notes anyway.
45 minutes before the meeting.
Yeah.
Before the CSC meeting.
The CSC meeting.
When he was requested.
Yeah. I mean, one of my complaints that day was, do we have to even look at this when he gave it to us less than an hour ago? And we were told we didn't have to, but we did. But we were totally dissatisfying. And then he gets subpoenas to attend and for his records. He misses deadlines to submit them. He makes promises he does not keep. And now he wants to wait longer. It's astounding. I just can't imagine delaying it at all.
Ms. Shreve.
I agree. And I mean, I represent the public. I have concerns, you know, for the services he's providing does not appear to be up to par, you know. But his request is based on a medical reason for not being here today, as I read this and as I understand it. So I do have concerns in that. I mean, if there's nothing, please, Ms. Galvin, stop me if I'm not supposed to say things, but there's nothing from a doctor, but it's just an email from him stating that he has had medical procedures. Does it warrant maybe giving him till January, putting this on the January agenda, given that, or what would be the next step? I guess next step anyways would go in for an investigation.
You can continue the matter until January or later, granting him a continuance. You can deny the request for a continuance and complete the initial review. And at that point, you would decide whether to move the case forward to the board. There's no due process rights that attach at this initial review stage. So you would be within your authority to consider the matter in his absence.
I would also point out that regardless of him not showing up here today, he also did not submit the records we requested for a second time.
May I add some clarifying information to that? The Complaint Screening Committee reviewed this case back in September. At that time, Dr. Olsham was not present. The committee directed staff to issue two subpoenas, one subpoena for his appearance when this matter was reviewed by the board, and a second subpoena for the complainant's complete clinical record. The subpoena for his clinical record was delivered at the end of September with a due date to submit the records by the end of October. At that time, Dr. Olshan did not submit the records or correspond with staff. Subsequently, in November, in the first week, I did email him to determine when the office could expect to receive the records, and I did not receive any response. The only correspondence I received from Dr. Olshan was approximately 2 days ago when he did request a continuance.
I guess another comment is certainly if he's physically unable to get here, it'd be good if. Oh, that sounds sad, and I don't want to minimize that, but we don't have, as Ms. Shreve mentioned, we don't have medical documentation of that. He does say that he's really struggling to continue his private practice. I assume he doesn't do that from his bed. And I would think he could make copies of records in the course of several months and give it to us. So it's just, I would be more comfortable just denying the continuance and then doing more subpoenas if we need them, that he do what he should have done 2 months ago as far as records and showing up.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
I had a question for both staff or Ms. Galvin. In terms of continuances, I know we've had many psychologists who we have done initial investigations, and they tend to have legal counsel representing them. And if I'm not mistaken, many of them request continuances that we do grant. And so what is the typical pattern for continuances?
Ms. Galvin, can you speak to that?
Generally, the first request for continuance is handled by staff, and I would say without exception, they're routinely granted. They want more time to file a response. An attorney has been newly hired. This request came in, and because of the history of the noncompliance with the subpoena, the failure to get in the records multiple times, the no-shows at the Complaint Screening Committee, the staff determined, and I did not disagree, that it would be best if the board made the decision whether to grant the continuance just because of that history.
Since we are having a January in-person board meeting, I would like to give, I mean, and it sounds like the medical issue has been ongoing for the last 3 months during the entire period of the investigation. I would be inclined to support maybe, you know, with a letter from board staff that, you know, that he does need to appear for the initial investigation and all records need to be turned in for the January meeting. So, because we have had, I mean, I know normally it's done under very, very prescribed circumstances. People have been compliant. The attorneys have requested 1 and 2 continuances, which we have granted. So one, the board staff does. Second, continuance, often the attorney and they come and request, and we have granted those as well. So I'm just inclined to be compassionate. So.
Is there any other discussion?
What's the date of that meeting?
January
10th.
And it's in person.
Correct.
As I see it, we have two options. One, to grant this continuance until the January meeting, or to deny this and schedule the January meeting as an informal.
I'm okay with doing the January as an informal.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially where I am with this, mm-hmm. is I don't want to play around with it anymore. I don't want to put our staff through it anymore. So I'm going to make a motion to deny the continuance. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion to deny the continuance and a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Diner, no.
Thank you. Motion carries. Now, that brings us back to, do we have grounds to move this to a January meeting for an informal? And I will now go back to Dr. Meyer to summarize and lead the discussion on whether or not there are grounds for an informal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, it's clear that there's a violation of BB, not providing timely records. And without those, there's allegations of additional violations of providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. That is the allegation from the complainant, as well as potentially P, falsely or fraudulently claiming to have performed a professional service, charging for a service or representing a service as a licensed own, so on. So, but again, without the records, we can't even examine that. And so I think it's clear to move forward to informal for failing to furnish information in a timely manner.
Dr. Flower?
Yes, at the case review committee, I recommended additional ones as well. I'd like to recommend them again. And some of you, they're the same as what you're talking about. One is obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation. E, gross negligence in the practice of psychology, H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a client or patient. And then, as mentioned, providing services that are unnecessary and unsafe, and failing to furnish information in a timely manner to the board.
Okay, any other discussion? I will entertain a motion.
So I'd move that we move forward with an informal, and can we just cite everything that?
I have A, E, H, O, P.
And B, B.
And B, B.
And B, B.
I second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Would you like staff to issue yet another subpoena for his personal appearance in January?
And records.
Yes, please. Is there any further discussion? Council, do we need a roll call vote on this?
You do not.
All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Dinar opposed?
No, I said aye.
Okay, thank you. Just
thank you, sir. Motion carries, and if we could please notice Dr. Olshan, and while this sounds horrible, that he's missing and what have you, and this is a man who's provided over 40 years of really high quality service, and I just want to recognize he's kind of been an institution in this state for a long time, and I'm, as was stated before, very sad to see this type of response. It's not what I would expect from a colleague, young or old. Okay. That disposes of number 10. Number 11 is done. Number 12. Discussion, consideration, possible action related proposed interim consent agreement for Dr. Wagner. Ms. Michelson, would you please provide the board with an update on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and board members. On October 23rd, the board reviewed complaint number 20-09 regarding Dr. Wagner. At that time, the board voted to summarily suspend Dr. Wagner's license. The board voted to move the matter to a formal hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearing to keep the suspension in place until such time that Dr. Wagner underwent a fitness for duty evaluation by a board-approved provider and is cleared to safely practice psychology. The matter was subsequently scheduled for a hearing before OWA. Following this, Dr. Wagner contacted board staff indicating that she wished to enter into an interim consent agreement and undergo an evaluation in lieu of proceeding to a formal hearing. A proposed interim consent agreement was drafted by legal counsel and sent to Dr. Wagner for her review. The interim consent agreement stipulated that Dr. Wagner's license will remain suspended until she can...
And you have the contents of that proposed interim consent agreement in your records without going into the details. And Dr. Wagner is present. She has signed the interim consent agreement. And we would ask that you, if you want to approve it and then vacate the formal hearing.
Okay. Dr. Wagner, would you like to have a comment?
I just wanted to let the board know that I really appreciate the ability to sign the consent agreement and have that formal hearing vacated and start again with the fitness for duty evaluation. I've actually made the appointment already, and if the board approves this, I'm going to move forward with that on January 7th. I also added two pieces of paper there that support my treatment goals and wanted to make sure that you noticed that that was there as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I plan to stay here all day to support students' efforts with ethics. This is a wonderful place to get your training, that's for sure.
Thank you, Dr. Wagner. We have a consent agreement before us.
You do.
Yes.
I'll make a motion to accept the consent agreement.
We have a motion to accept the consent agreement. Is there a second?
Second.
And to vacate the formal hearing?
And to vacate, yes.
Okay.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second to accept and vacate. Is there further discussion? Is there further discussion? Hearing none. Do we need a...
You do need a roll call.
Ms. Poe, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Gill?
I believe he's off the call. He left after an hour.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your coming in, Dr. Wagner.
Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
This is the way a professional responds to the board, is they come in
prepared.
They come in prepared, and they come in responsive, and they tell students that ethics are important. I think that's
absolutely
one.
Yes, as long as they can get lunch along the way here, I'm going to stick around.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to ask, do we have a time with Dr. Turner calling in?
Mr. Chairman, we have arranged for Dr. Turner and his colleague Alex Siegel at ASPPB to dial in at 11 a.m.
So we can do other things until 11.
And indeed.
Thank you very much. That will take agenda item 13. We're going to place at 11 a.m. That will be the discussion regarding adoption of the enhanced examination for the professional practice of psychology in terms of the competency section. So I'm going to kind of skip past that. Next we have... No, that's we have a time in this afternoon for number 14. Is that correct?
It's not a timed item, but are they coming?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. This we advise this group to arrive at about noon, with the understanding that the board may has the privilege to take a lunch break. So they are hoping for an early afternoon review or presentation and review of this matter.
So like 1 o'clock or something.
1 o'clock seems reasonable.
And that's PC SAS for 1 o'clock.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Then we will be able to move along to 15. This is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding information received on Dr. Carol Gifalo, PsyD.
Gandolfo.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I have an update on this matter as well. Subsequent to the posting of this agenda, we do have a 24-hour requirement, of course, to post the agenda, after which time it cannot be revised. We did receive from an attorney that Dr. Gandolfo now has representation. He requested a continuation of this matter as he was just very recently retained, and so, as is customary, staff did grant that continuation.
Very well. Number 16, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding psychologist application for licensure by universal recognition from Dr. Rivera. Dr. Malott, could you update the board?
Dr. Rivera applied for licensure under the universal recognition. He was licensed in Puerto Rico, and he has now subsequently established residency in Arizona and has applied for licensure. Puerto Rico does not require an exam. However, under universal recognition, the two things that we look at is, do they have residency in Arizona, and do they have a active valid license in one of our state or territories across, basically in any of our jurisdictions, including Canada, I think, right? And he does have that license. So it appears that he meets the criteria for universal recognition based on our current new state statute on universal recognition. So having said that, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to approve his app, unless I'm missing something, Dr. Flowers.
Oh, I second the motion.
Is there discussion?
Yes. Didn't we previously...
Sorry, could you please repeat the motion?
My motion is to approve the license under universal recognition, recognizing that universal recognition only requires an active license and an approved jurisdiction, and residency established in the state of Arizona. The license, this is for the purpose of our audience, has to be active in good standing for at least 1 year or so.
Okay, thank you.
Discussion, please.
Did we not deny a previous Puerto Rico application?
We put them on hold.
Okay.
If I could, on November 1st, 2019, the board removed this application from the consent agenda and requested additional information regarding the exam that he took for Puerto Rico because it was not the EPPP. And subsequently, Dr. Rivera has sent in the exam information, and it is in your packet.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, basically what he showed was Puerto Rico does its own exam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if there's an issue about maybe the, I'm not sure the EPPP is available in Spanish. I have,
yes.
It is.
It is. Okay, then that wouldn't be a reason. But the board had previously expressed concern due to the lack of EPPP requirements in Puerto Rico. But statutorily, universal recognition, he is eligible for licensure in spite of that.
Well, let's, I'm going to start some discussion. There are 64 jurisdictions that we've referencing here. The Canadian provinces, the U.S. territories, and the 50 states. Plus the District of Columbia has their own board. Every single one of them, except Puerto Rico, requires someone pass the boards. The EPPP. Every single state requires that professional psychologists practicing pass the examination for the professional practice of psychology. We have dozens of people in Arizona right now who are fully qualified educationally but have yet to obtain a passing score on that exam. If we approve this application, and there will be many more like it, I know, we're approving someone who has not passed their boards, the professional boards for this profession. I'm not sure that there's any other healthcare profession that licenses people without passing their boards. Puerto Rico asked for a Spanish version, and at significant expense, upwards of $1 million, the owner of the exam created a Spanish version, normed a Spanish version, and provided it to Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico chose not to use it, or the EPPP. Now, this board has the ability, apparently, under a law. Could you remind me what the title of that law was?
Universal recognition?
And that's the short title.
Out-of-state applicants, residency, military spouses, licensure, certification exceptions. Is that one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it in R5?
3243.02.
So that's it's for out-of-state folks. As opposed to folks who are established residents here.
Well, no, it says out-of-state, semicolon, residents, semicolon. So that's the title.
Yeah.
The title has residents in it. So, and it doesn't, there is no definition, because I pulled it up, started looking.
Yeah.
There's no definition of what, you know, what's residents. Does that mean you're here a month, 3 months, 5 years? There's no definition on. I think we need to be careful as a board. We only follow what's stated in the law.
I agree. We have to follow the law as the as counsel and lets us know we're following the law or not. It puts an interesting conundrum. We grant a license without an EPPP. We have arrangements with other states to accept an Arizona license, yet every other state requires the EPPP.
I'm not sure how this is going to work. Are we now withdrawing from those agreements? Are we no longer part of that system if we're going to license people who haven't passed the boards? Now, this is the only place this could happen is in Puerto Rico. And I also, for the record, I'm going to tell you, I squarely approve of mobility. I'd like to see every state have a law like this so that we could practice interjurisdictionally as much as possible. But it's, at some point, you say, what's the minimum standard? The minimum standard is a doctoral degree in passing the boards. That's it. Oh, that's the minimal. That's as minimal as you can get. Or licensure.
Chair, but what we have is, and we have a test. I'm not granted, I don't know what's on the test. It gives the different material peer subjects that was passed, and for that jurisdiction approved it as their guiding test. So I'm not sure where that puts us in part of, you know, basically making a judgment on their test to be a practicing psychologist.
To date, it's not recognized in any other state in the country.
But it is recognized in Puerto Rico.
Not a state, but it's right. Not recognized in any other jurisdiction in the United States or Canada.
Yeah. Sorry, I guess I don't have a loud enough voice.
I have a question, and this is for maybe Ms. Galvin. When I read the statute, it says out-of-state applicants, and it says license in one other state. They don't bring up territories or other jurisdictions. So what do they mean by state?
There is case law that requires us to read state as the United States or our territories.
So it would not apply to Canada then?
I would want to look at that more carefully, but state would apply to our jurisdictions and territories.
Okay. I just want to clarify that.
My understanding is in his correspondence to us, he's offered to take the EPPP. Which would make his license mobile to go into any place in the United States. Is there even a way to approve this applicant to take the EPPP if we licensed him?
I would think that
I'm sorry to interject. Going back to the question that was asked, we have a specific statute that says when any statute in the state of Arizona uses the word state, it includes the territories of the United States.
Yes, Council.
And the statute is
AR-1-215. Yeah, Ms. Galvin clarified that, so that's no longer a question for me. This is Dr. Malott speaking.
Go ahead. So I guess the question then that we're all pondering is does anyone that comes and wants a universal exception have to pass EPPP? Or is this exam given in Puerto Rico, that's I guess their exam to be a psychologist, going to be accepted as relevant?
Well, under the universal do you mind, Dr. Bohansky? Can I speak? Yes. Yeah. Sorry, forgot that. Under the universal recognition, we are not looking at any other criteria except the fact that they have a license in another jurisdiction, state, and it's for 1 year, and they've established residency in Arizona, and we do have a substantive policy statement defining how we define the residency or what proofs of evidence they need to submit to determine residency. So those are the three things we are looking at. It is my understanding that we cannot look at any other, we cannot request other.
Is this at the same practice level?
At the same practice level. So I read that to mean at the doctoral level. Our practice level is set at the doctoral level. I don't know.
Ms. Galvin?
Does the board care to receive legal advice in executive session?
Sure.
I'll make a motion. We receive legal advice in executive session.
I'll second it.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Can you please, I'm sorry, can you please repeat the motion and call to your conference?
We're going to move into executive session. I believe we will call you. Is that right, Jennifer?
Correct.
We will call you. We've asked for legal advice from our attorney.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Sit tight. We're going to go chat with the law. Board stands back in regular session. Having completed our executive session, and much to the chagrin of everyone, since we're all keyed up over it, I'm going to table this discussion and move to another item in which we have calling in from God knows where in the country, but Dr. Turner with ASPPB, and I believe Dr. Siegel.
Dr. Siegel had a little bit of an emergency. His wife hit her head, and they had to go to the hospital. We think she's okay, but they're doing some precautionary tests.
Okay.
So he may not be able to join us.
Well, we have the eminent Dr. Matt Turner with us, and this is agenda item number 13, which we are well behind in time on, but if we could, this is, Heidi, could you give us a background on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. This matter is placed on the agenda in order to afford the board an opportunity to receive an update directly from ASPPB relative to the status of the launch of the Part 2 skills component of the ECPP. As you noted, Dr. Turner, Senior Director of Examination Services, is with us today. We are asking him to provide us with a status report on that implementation and also an update on the rollout timeline. This is really a two-part sort of discussion in addition to the very current update from the folks at ASPPB. We also have a series of questions that we need to address at the board level with respect to how to implement and roll out that component, depending on applicants' individual statuses, where they are in the application process, where they are in terms of attempting and passing or not passing the ECPP. So we've outlined those questions for you, but first and foremost, we need to hear from Dr. Turner.
Thank you very much. Matt, this is Dr. Bob. Welcome. You're speaking in formal session with the Arizona Board, and in the audience, several dozen enthusiastic students all waiting to hear what the hell is going to happen with this. So, if you could bring us up to date, Matt.
I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing, so I just wanted to be sure that you wanted an update just on the status of the exam first. Is that correct?
Status of implementation.
Right. So we're ready to go and launch January 2020. I think one of the questions that remained is that a viable start date for some jurisdictions, including Arizona, in case there's any kind of rule changes that are in order. And I don't think in Arizona's case that there's much that needs to be changed and based on what we looked at. But also in terms of bringing the jurisdictions that are on board at least relatively together. So we are certainly ready to go. And then some of that depends on what your needs are as a jurisdiction.
I guess our needs initially here are to understand how this impacts our process.
Are we going to approve candidates for both parts? That remains under our jurisdiction.
Okay.
Are we doing this in line with other states so that we're contributing? And the last thing is, we know we hear immediately on part one. How long is it going to take to hear about a passing score on part two? And then other board members have questions as well.
Okay. So that's a good question. Well, one of the things that when we sat down and talked with the jurisdictions that were prepared to move forward is that I think in all of those jurisdictions, what would be required is for taking the two is applications received after the implementation date. So those would be new applications. So there was some time that was required to receive applications and process an application to take the part one, or schedule the part one, take the part one, pass the part one, receive those scores, then schedule and take the part two. We had eight jurisdictions, I believe, that said they were ready to go at various times. So Georgia has indicated to us that they want to move forward a little bit later due to some rule changes that they need to make. So we had set up a date of January 1 all the way through May. In some jurisdictions like Nevada, that doesn't pose a problem because they're able to either most of their candidates are either in a postdoc period or they have a mechanism of deferring full licensure until the scores come in. So that beta window is really in place to allow time for applications, allow time for candidates to take the one and take the two. What it allows us to do after the window is to close the exam period, score the, well, essentially what we do is we take statistics on all of the items and throw out the items that perform poorly. So if they're not psychometrically working to our standards, then those are not included in the scoring. That final scoring goes through a standard-setting process. Those scores are rescored using the items that are considered good and then delivered to the jurisdiction. So depending on what Arizona's needs are, if there's difficulties in terms of delaying licensure, they may want to move into that process a little bit later on that continuum. If there's any that allows fewer people to get through that particular process, but the window had to be fairly large in order to allow time for people to do those three steps, basically get in applications, take the one, take the two.
So we're looking at a six-month window.
It's a six-month window of the beta testing. There's also several weeks of the delay in terms of doing the standard setting and rescoring those exams. What we found in previous beta testing, most often the candidates, the largest volume of candidates is right before the beta window closes because that's the maximum amount of time for preparation, although I don't know that there's going to be much needed in terms of preparation since this is skills either you have or you don't. So what we've seen is that right at the tail end, and that allows for a lower cost examination. We're offering the beta testing window for $100 as opposed to the $300 for the early adopting window. But in exchange for that, there's a delayed score. Similar to what we used to do when we did paper and pencil exams, not really all that long ago, where the tests were scored and then the examinations scores were delivered to the after a period of time to the jurisdictions.
Having gone through the paper pencil days, I remember waiting months to get a score. That would be true here, despite being spoiled and getting results instantaneously on the current ECCC. This process will, because we're beta testing and doing statistics, we would be a leader in this process, along with Georgia and seven other jurisdictions, but we'd be contributing that data to the standardization process, and that will delay candidates getting their test result.
Right. And, you know, I took it, it was computerized, but there still was a delayed score. So it's only been about 4 years that we've been providing the instantaneous scores. I'm glad to be, that we're able to do that now. But it hasn't been that long that we've been doing them instantaneously.
Okay, thanks. Are there questions from board members?
How many states again? How many states have agreed to do this test?
So we have eight, and I think one of the concerns that I had was one delay of licensure. Now Georgia wants to move forward, but they're not moving forward till November. So that's a little unfortunate. But the seven other jurisdictions are ready to move forward. Either January or February 15th in some cases.
I'm sorry, Matt, I'm just not up on it. I thought we were talking March, and Georgia and Arizona were both talking March.
Well, Georgia, I was under the impression that they were also coming a little bit earlier. My latest correspondence with them is that they have a rule change that has to be made. So they are now looking at November. So there is a possibility, and I'm open to having this discussion with you all if it's moving forward that we want to all move forward together. We certainly can consider moving this back a little bit to kind of accommodate Georgia's time frame as well. That makes it a little bit easier for beta testing, but that's quite a few months into the future.
I think having a larger group makes sense, you know, especially when you're trying to establish norms and reliability and all that. So I would rather wait, you know.
To come on board with Georgia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
Dr. Meyer.
So would you then, are you saying that November would be an appropriate start date for you, or are you saying you want to start sometime in that same window as them, which it gives you a little bit of flexibility if you want to start a little earlier and then have them come in. They can contribute to that beta testing process as well.
Matt, this is Matt Meyer. So we currently have a one-year deadline to take the ECCC.
And
part one.
Okay.
So what would be the window that we're looking for? It sounded like you were looking at 5 months of testing.
Yeah. So it was essentially January through May. But that really accounted for, again, application, passing the one, and then scheduling and passing the two. What we're going to do, if that's okay with the jurisdictions that are on board during the beta testing, is sometimes it takes a little bit of time to find a scheduled time with the Pearson centers. So rather than processing scores and sending weekly scores to you on the one, if you're an early adopting jurisdiction, we'll daily submit them for eligibility on your behalf if you want us to do that, just to expedite the process. And that gives, you know, a week to 10 days of time that person can then try to schedule the two. So realistically, anybody submitting an application, getting approved, taking the one, will probably have 3 months to schedule the two.
Okay.
So if I'm hearing you right, we would approve them, much as we do now, to take the one. And then they would go ahead and do that, but you would then make them eligible once they pass that to take the two yourselves. And that would expedite it. It wouldn't have to come back here and go through another meeting and all the rest of that.
We would do that if you would like us to do that. The responsibility, or we actually left the authority to the jurisdictions to do it. We didn't want to step in on your toes, but during the beta testing process, in an effort to expedite this, we certainly wanted to try and be helpful.
Okay. Matt, this is Heidi, our new executive director. She has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I've had a couple of conversations with him to this point, mostly around ensuring that we could construe 32-2072 in such a way that, because the language refers to the examination for professional practice in psychology, which is ASPPB's examination, couldn't we construe that language to mean today the examination is EPPP Part 1. At a point in time determined by the board, the examination means EPPP, which happens to be now consist of two components, 1 and 2. And the answer seems to be yes. And ASPPB is willing to supply us with language that if this was ever questioned or challenged, we could effectively establish that just what I described. Once upon a time, EPPP consisted of one component. Now it consists of two.
Now the test was revised, and we're professionally moving to the revised test because it's the most updated one, and the revised test is given in two settings. That's what we're doing.
Essentially, yes.
So, Chair, so essentially when we approve for them to take the test, it would be we agree to them take the EPPP Part 1, and if passed, they automatically can then take the 2.
Yes. And that
and if they fail, they'd have to...
That comes back to us.
Back.
Other question?
So if they fail Part 1, it comes back to us?
Yes.
You don't? Okay.
You have to pass Part 1 to take Part 2.
Right? Correct.
But if they pass Part 1, it could move immediately to Part 2.
Yes.
Which it should.
And so would it still be a year deadline to pass both of them?
The year thing isn't our limitation. That's coming from, I believe, the test service. When we approve...
We have a rule that you can take it 4 times within a year. That's our current rule.
No, ma'am.
So we don't have an actual one-year deadline in our rules here at ASPPB.
Our rule is we notify the candidate. They notify the testing center gets notified that they're eligible to take it, or the testing service. Pearson gets notified that they're eligible. They have a year's window then to schedule the test.
And is that by statute?
I think that's by Pearson rule.
No, it'd have to be by statute or rule.
I'm looking at the exam.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is, and the reason why I think that might not be correct is because we have had candidates whose year expired and they went and took the test before we were able to notify them.
Oh, okay.
And so I think that it's...
I thought they turned into a pumpkin if they didn't take it within a year, and Pearson wouldn't let them through the process.
Additionally, Mr. Chair, if I could also add, we also have the extension opportunities. While we do have the 1 year, the candidates can request a 6-month extension up to three times, 2 for cause. So that really gives them 2.5 years from the date of approval to take and sit for the exam.
Those are the anxious ones. Other questions for Dr. Turner?
Well,
Dr. Meyer?
I guess my concern is if we set, when we decide to make Part 2 part of the examination, it could still be 1 to 2 years before somebody is eligible to take part two. I mean, if they have a year to delay to take part one, and then, or if they fail it once. So my concern is, how do we get sufficient numbers, and what is the period of time that the beta testing is occurring? Because that has to be at least a year out, I would think, unless we change the time frames.
So,
yeah, I don't know what most of your candidates do. If most take that full year, you know, there may be some motivation to take it in the beta testing window, just because it's such a low cost. We did find that to be the case on the psychopharmacology exam when we rolled that out. So the window has to be long enough at least to support the possibility, a reasonable possibility, that they can get through it if they're motivated to do it. And I think our latest data is first-time test takers pass it, if they're from accredited programs, doctoral test takers, is 82% pass on the first time. So the bulk of your applicants should get through the first and then move on to the second if they choose to do so.
And if they choose to do so, they can do it very cheap.
Right.
That's how we're trying to drive them to do it quicker. If you do that within this window, you can do it for $100.
Right. Exactly.
And so the beta window has been set or is not?
No. The beta window.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. The beta window has.
Has the time frame been set for the beta window?
So the time frame is essentially 6 months for the beta window, but that again, that includes new application taking the one and taking the two. If somebody can get their application approved quickly and take the one quickly, then they could have potentially 5 months to take the two.
But
months would be a reasonable time.
And when does the beta window start?
So as of right now, we're ready to start the beta window January. Depending on what Arizona decides, we may want to move that back. If you are, because what I heard was you may want to move back to go with Georgia. You know, I'll have to talk to Nevada and Missouri about what they are looking to do. And try to all of us coordinate to go together if we're going to do that. That would certainly allow for the those are the four largest jurisdictions that are doing this. Texas recently approved it as well, but they have some hoops that they have to go through, even though it's been approved by the board. But that it does, you know, it's a little bit of a delay. We have all the content ready to go, but it does. The advantage of that would be that all the states move together, or jurisdictions, because some are in Canada.
You know when Texas is going to move?
Right. And I don't know how long their process is. Just know that they voted to move forward.
Okay. Unless there are other questions from folks, let us do this, Matt. We're going to end up tabling this and coming back to it this afternoon and seeing if we can come up with a time that fits us, and we'll get that back to you pretty quickly.
Okay.
I wouldn't put us down on January 1. Pardon?
Would you like me to call back in?
I'll give you a buzz if staff will give you a buzz if we need you to call back in.
Okay, sounds great. Well, thanks for your time, and if something else comes up, certainly contact me, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So, with that being said, and the time being what it is, I'd like to go into a lunch break. Give us time to replenish and nurture ourselves, and we'll come back at 1 o'clock, please. We have
a couple more important things to do and a couple items we've tabled to move on with. We're in recess until 1 o'clock.